We are the End Zone Podcast, and we think Tom Brady should retire. Welcome to the End Zone Podcast. We're back, ladies and gents, here today with a great show for you. Thursday, we had our pal Mark Sessler on, but today it's just us and the great Patrick Norton. Patrick, who just started his time at Kansas, is a freshman student there. How you doing, Patrick? How was the first day?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on again. First day was fantastic. Only had one class, and now it is a absolute hailstorm outside.
Well, that's not bad. Is a hail pretty big in Kansas?
I'd say so. Golf ball sized. It didn't really hail much back home near Chicago, but
right.
We'll see.
Well, it's good to hear you had a good first day, Patrick. So now we move on to the football side of things here at the End Zone Podcast, because this is, as you all know, the End Zone Podcast. By the way, we talk a lot more than the NFL. We'll talk a little bit more about that at the end of the show, but Chris has something big coming up for you guys at the end of the week, so stay tuned for that. Also, if you haven't already, go check out our Thursday show where we talked with Mark Sessler. It was a lot of fun, and I think you'd all really enjoy it. Without further ado, I think we should kind of get into our show today. So today we're going to do our AFC South preview, kind of a new take on how we're doing our division previews with this one today. But first, let's jump right into some fantastic preseason week two talk. I know that Chris, you're kind of ready for the preseason to be over, but we still have two more weeks to go, and preseason week two was in the books. So I'll start with you, Patrick. One major takeaway from you from this week two of the preseason?
Well, it was in the news today that there had been no decision on Glennon or Trubisky being the first string going into next week. And that kind of excites me as a Bears fan. I think it kind of speaks for itself. The best tweet that I saw after the game on Saturday between the Bears and Cardinals, in which the Bears actually won 24-23. The best tweet that I saw was, You've got drunk guys in a bar that are stopping what they're doing in order to just watch Mitch Trubisky play in a fourth quarter of a preseason game. I mean, that is fantastic.
I saw that from our boy Kevin Patrick. Yeah, I think you might have seen that via me. I think I retweeted that. Yeah, I thought that was pretty
very possible.
Pretty great. Great tweet via him. Yeah, Trubisky has really surprised me. And just as a Broncos fan who has to suffer through Paxton Lynch, like the fact that the Bears took Trubisky with the number two overall pick this year, I mean, I'm still a little skeptical. I think they probably could have gotten him with that third pick without trading up what they did, but he's definitely paying off. I think he looks good. I'm not sure if he's a week one starter, but I definitely think he's going to probably start over six games this year. What do you think about Trubisky, Chris?
Game pretty good. If I remember correctly, he was 6 of 8. He had another great game. I think he's going to be the starter in Chicago coming into week one, because Glennon and Sanchez have sucked this preseason, especially in that first game. They've improved a little bit into the second game, but in that first game, they looked like trash.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Glennon, I don't think he was ever the option. I didn't understand that contract that they gave him in the first place. I mean, he hadn't thrown a meaningful NFL pass in over like 3 years by the time he received that contract. I mean, I think that Trubisky's probably going to get the brunt of the starts, and I'm very happy about that. Another young quarterback this preseason that really has impressed me. He didn't impress me as much as I would have liked in week one, but when I was really excited to see him, but I was super hyped for what I saw from him in week two was Jared Goff. The guy went 16 for 18. He had over 100 yards through the air, threw a touchdown, a really great touchdown where he ran a play-action bootleg kind of pass perfectly, which is great for a spread option guy like him, and found the open receiver open in the end zone, threw a 30-yard pass to him, no problem. And it's just what you wanted to see from a guy like Goff dominating in a preseason game. That's what good starting quarterbacks should do. He reminds me a lot of Kirk Cousins, which makes sense because McVay comes from that Redskins system. And I think that that's a very underrated coaching signing. I think the Rams got a real steal when they picked him up. I know he's unproven, but I think he can do big things with Goff in Los Angeles.
That's a wait and see. As far as Goff goes, I know he didn't play good last season, but so far in the season, like you said, he's looked pretty good. I expect him to be much improved coming into this season, even going into the regular season. But I don't know if it's going to be enough to take Los Angeles anywhere. I'm not talking about playoffs either. I'm just talking about I don't know what he will do to help Los Angeles this season.
Yeah, I mean, he's still obviously unproven, and the preseason can only tell you so much. But I think that he is definitely not a bust.
No.
At the moment. Patrick.
Yes, sir.
Did you watch any of that Rams games? Any thoughts on Goff?
I was able to see a few highlights. My overall opinion on Goff is that Jeff Fisher I think Jeff Fisher thought that he had another year with Goff. And I think that he thought that once you kind of draft a quarterback, you usually get another year or two. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case for him. I like McVay, and I think that he's going to do wonders with Goff, because Goff is kind of like your prototypical quarterback that you need to build from the ground up after he struggles in his first year. Kind of in the way that Jeff Fisher could have saved his job, and the way that he went wrong was kind of throwing Jared Goff into the wildfire right away. And I think that that's kind of why John Fox might be holding back Mitch Trubisky for the first year. Even though that's kind of an organizational decision on that one. But either way, I think Jared Goff could find success in the league with the new regime with the Rams. That being said, it's going to take a decent amount of work.
Yeah, I think that I hate Jeff Fisher. I love the guy. I think that he didn't deserve a chance to be an NFL coach after the 14th time he went 7-9. I think either way, that firing was going to be an inevitable, but that's beside the point. I think McVay is the best thing that has happened to Goff in Los Angeles, and I think there are really big things that are coming for this team. Do you guys have anything else from this preseason week two?
I don't think that saying – if you say that Jared Fisher was still there, I don't think Goff would be at the position he is now, which is better than he was last season. I don't think Fisher and his coaching staff could take Goff and make him better.
I 100% agree. That's why I think McVay was the best thing to happen to Goff. We were right before we came to start recording this, all of us were watching a little bit of this Browns-Giants game. Odell Beckham Jr. kind of went down with an ankle injury, and it got us talking. Patrick, you, of course, being the strongest opinion of the group, a lot of people have Odell Beckham as one of the top three wide receivers in the league. You don't see him that way. Why?
I just feel like he's been overrated ever since that catch against, I want to say it was Dallas, and then he had another really good play. Against Dallas last year on that slant route that I think you brought up just before we began recording. But it's just another case of another wide receiver being hyped up. that catch was terrific. One of the greatest that I've ever witnessed. Kind of glad that I was watching that game live, but at the same time, I think, in my opinion, you get more productivity out of other receivers in the league.
Yeah. So you made a interesting point. You said that probably you'd have, like most people do, Jones and Brown at that 1 and 2 spot. Who would you insert at that 3 spot in place of Green? In place of Beckham?
In my opinion, you could really slide anyone up there along the likes of A.J. Green, Mike Evans, Jordy Nelson. Those three kind of strike a chord first with me. But in any other way, it just seems like, I don't know. Once you kind of get past the top 5, top 6 guys, it kind of just turns into a mosh pit of the exact same wide receivers.
So my argument against you there is I get that he makes a lot of flashy plays and people are kind of against his style of play for some reason. I personally love it. I'm on the side that Odell Beckham is a top 3 receiver. I think he could even be up in that 2 or 1 spot, but I'm not here to debate that today. An interesting point you make is with AJ Green taking that 4th spot. If you look at the 2 stats combined over the past 2 years, Green the past 2 years has had 1,297 yards and 964 yards, whereas Beckham has had 1,367 to 1,450. Add that up with the year that he kind of came out with that Dallas catch. He had 1,305 yards. So it wasn't just that Dallas catch and all these flashy plays. He's a consistent receiver who gets yardage. The reason I think I'd have him probably above Greenbo is the biggest stat to me where there's a disparity is touchdowns. The last 3 years, A.J. Green, 4 touchdowns, 10 touchdowns, 6 touchdowns. The last 3 years for Beckham, 10, 13, and 12. He's consistently a double-digit touchdown receiver, and he averages 9. His average over his career for yards per catch is 5.2. And if you put, just doing the math quickly in my head, if you give him as many years as A.J. Green has, A.J. Green currently has 8.5 yards per reception. If you evened out their time in the league, it'd be pretty damn close between those two numbers for average. Just from a pure statistics-wise point, I think Beckham is a top 3, and I think that the argument that he is not top 3 just because he made 1 or 2 special plays is kind of invalid, if you will. Like, he makes more than special plays. He's a consistent, dominant wide receiver.
Okay, I understand that. And I totally agree with you in that form. But as my counter to that, I'd say look at this year's Giants receiving core compared to the last 3 years. What do you notice? You notice people around Odell Beckham Jr. now who actually have the talent to reel in some of these catches. Eli Manning isn't going to be kind of forced to throw to Odell Beckham Jr. People say, but Odell Beckham Jr. has done well against Josh Norman, and Josh Norman is a really good corner in the league. I won't even get started on that discussion because I kind of think that Josh Norman is also on the overrated end of things. But I will also say that was a whole mental game. That whole thing was just Josh Norman losing his cool, and we've seen Odell lose his cool before and all sorts of things. But I just think that they're, especially from the fantasy sense, they're just better options out there.
Yeah, and Chris, we'll get to you in a second because I know you have something to say, but just kind of a counter to your counter, Patrick. The reason I think that says a lot about Odell that Eli was that for a long time he was the only one Eli had to throw to, because you look at the wide receiver core of the past 2 years, you're right, around him there is very little talent, maybe minus Larry O'Donnell at tight end, but I mean, he isn't anything compared to Beckham. I think that everyone the past 2 years has been, ever since he came into the league and made a name for himself by making that catch, Odell Beckham is always double teamed, triple teamed. And he does the same kind of thing that Antonio Brown and Julio Jones do. And if you're going to go with that logic where you say he didn't have the talent around him, well, look at Antonio Brown. Like, he's had Martavis Bryant around him. I know he wasn't there last year, but he's had Martavis Bryant around him and Heath Miller at tight end for most of his career. I mean, and you look at Julio Jones, you had Roddy White there for a while, and then last year they had all the weapons around him. So I think that I see your point that some people can overrate him, and I agree that probably where I have him is a little bit high, but I think he's still definitely a top three receiver. Chris, you've been waiting very patiently, holding your tongue. Here is your chance, my friend. Spit some hot fire on why Odell Beckham is not a top three NFL wide receiver.
Where do you have him ranked?
I have him at three.
Okay. So let me get my. I know Patrick said earlier that Odell has been overrated because of those two plays. That is true. And nobody can decline that, because after that play, it was like that was the best play that has ever happened in the NFL. People were already saying, oh, is Odell top five? Is Odell top five? No. Back then he wasn't. But at the same time, this comes down to one thing for me. Consistency. Consistency.
Minus the playoffs.
Hold on. This matters. This is why he's not number one or two. So what did Odell do in the biggest moment of his career? I think he fell down on his job. I mean, I have him at number three. But when you saw Julio in the playoffs, he didn't fall down on the job. Hold on. Let me finish my thought. When Matt Ryan threw to Julio, he even caught that one ball in the Super Bowl. I'm not saying that was a spectacular catch to me, but I just feel like Julio was more consistent than Brown or Odell in the playoffs, and that is part of what it comes down to.
Go ahead. So you're saying that 2 years ago, when Antonio Brown was knocked out with a concussion against the Denver Broncos, and he didn't play in the playoffs last year, and he didn't do well in the playoffs, or one of the myriad of other times that Antonio Brown has struggled in the playoffs, that he let his team down and he was not a top two receiver. It happens. What I'm saying is I don't understand it. Maybe it's just because of the catches thing and the way Odell perceives himself, but just because of his personality doesn't mean he's not a top three receiver. Personality aside, it doesn't matter what he does off the field. Like, the on-field talent speaks for itself. There are plenty of games where Julio Jones hasn't stepped up to his full potential, and plenty of games where Antonio Brown hasn't stepped up to his full potential. You look at that Steelers Super Bowl against the Packers, Chris. What did he do again in that Steelers Super Bowl against the Packers?
Hold on. Let me go back before that. You were talking about Antonio Brown. I'm eliminating him from this right this second for what I'm about to say. In the biggest moment of his career, Odell fell down on the job, and that is what that counts for something.
I mean, I guess maybe overall wise, but you can't blame and put an entire season on the fact that he had one bad game. Like, that just isn't fair. That just isn't fair, in my opinion. But we could go on this.
I didn't put down. Hold on a second. Before we move on, I have him at number three, and that is why I have him at number three is because he fell down on the job in the biggest stage of his career.
Right. Well, I agree. I think he's three. I just think you guys kind of give him a bad rep. Patrick, we're sorry for keeping you under wraps for so long. You still with us, buddy?
Yeah, of course.
All right. Well, let's move on now to a more share-worthy segment, let's call it. We are going to do our AFC South preview today. And gentlemen, in the past for these, we've done questions, but I thought it'd be a little bit more fun if we went around and did a fantasy draft. So the rules of this are it's going to be a snake draft. We'll start with Chris. He'll have the number one pick. Patrick, you'll have the number two pick. I'll have the number three pick. We will go around the table, and we will pick a quarterback, a running back two, three wide receivers, an offensive line, and a defense from this division, each of us. How's that sound, guys?
Fantastic.
Sounds fun.
Awesome. Well, then let's get right to this. We'll start with you, Chris. You have the number one pick. You're on the clock. You get to decide where you want to start us out. You can start us out at any position. Let's let this draft begin.
I'm going to start with DeAndre Hopkins. I didn't want to start with the quarterback, but if he had a more consistent quarterback, he had over 1,000 yards in the last season before Brock Osweiler came and destroyed the offense. So, I mean, let's not even get into that, but I feel like because he had missed over 70, or he didn't catch, excuse me, over 70 of his passes, but I believe that was because of the quarterback, and he still had over 1,000 yards. I believe he would be a great fantasy wide receiver this year, if Deshaun Watson starts, which I'm hoping, because I don't think I can't even think of his name right now. I don't think he's going to play well if he starts, but that would be why I would start Hopkins at number one.
Patrick, you got the number two pick in the draft.
Oof. I'm going to explain something here, and it's my distaste for how fantasy drafts go right now, and I wish that they did it by everyone has to choose a quarterback in the first round. Then I feel like it would just be so much more simple. I guess it's more strategy to kind of do it all mumbo-jumbo, but I think it would be more competitive if you just went down by position. Anyway, I will take I'm between Leonard Fournette and my running back spotter T.Y. Hilton, but I'll stick with T.Y. Hilton for now. I feel like he'll be a decent fantasy pick this year, especially if Andrew Luck can stay healthy. There was the report today that he could see some time right at the beginning of the season, which would be very helpful to that Indianapolis team. So with my pick of T.Y. Hilton in the first round, it's kind of a risky thing, but you're not going to find too many wide receivers that really stand out in the AFC South. You can come up with a few options. Honestly, when I was kind of preparing for tonight's show, I came up with, I believe, seven options in the wide receiver slots. And what I find when I look at the teams is that you've got T.Y. Hilton kind of stands out above everybody else. Had Chris not taken DeAndre Hopkins, of course. Obviously, Corey Davis and Allen Robinson are terrific talents in that division as well. But Hilton, if Andrew Luck can stay healthy, which I think he will, I think that this is kind of the year that he'll play that full season. I think this is the year that he can put up some really good numbers not only to help the Colts kind of get back to the stature of where they were, but also in a fantasy sense as well.
Right. With the last pick here in this first round, I am going to go kind of a surprise pick that I probably could have saved until we take our wide receiver too. But I this is how much I believe in this guy. I think I'm going to take Eric Decker. It's going to be a really surprising pick to people who play actual fantasy, but from a pure league-wide standpoint, was probably one of the best signings this offseason. I think Marcus Mariota needed some big targets, and he definitely got them. And Eric Decker, when he played with an elite guy like Peyton Manning, had one of the best wide receiver years that he was a top 10 wide receiver when he played with Manning, basically. And he even made Ryan Fitzpatrick look like a mid-tier quarterback when they had that year in New York when he and Marshall caught the record for the most combined Jets touchdowns by wide receivers. But I think the most underrated part of that signing is the Titans last year were ranked number one in red zone offense. They had the most scores in the red zone. And if you look at Eric Decker's career, he is an absolute beast in the red zone. And he's just going to eat up on cornerbacks all day. I could see him having a 15 to 17 touchdown year, a big fantasy year. So he's kind of in the actual NFL. I think that by the end of this year, again, we're going to be talking about him as a top 10 wide receiver. And I think that in fantasy, if he's not gone by the sixth or eighth round, take him. I think that he has had only one injury in his career. So he's a really good low risk, high reward pick. Okay, Chris, this is where you.
For my first pick, or the second round first pick, I'm going to take Marcus Mariota. It was really between Mariota and Luck. I believe Luck will be protected better because the Tennessee offensive line is clearly better than Luck's offensive line as of right now. And the fact that we don't know Luck's status. He could be out game one. It's looking more like he's going to be than not. So,
yeah,
just take Mariota.
Absolutely. Actually, I'm going to disagree with you that I agree with you that Mariota is probably the number one choice. I don't think that Luck would be my number two. For me, it's Deshaun Watson, if he can win that job in Houston, which I expect him to do. At some point, he's a franchise quarterback down in Houston. He's gonna make that Houston offensive line look so much better too with his scrambling ability. Some of the best evasion techniques that I've seen in the NFL so far in the preseason. That's for sure. And it's kind of like you don't want to dip your toe in the water in Jacksonville with quarterbacks because you don't even know who's gonna start down there. And I guess you could say the same thing about Houston right now, but Deshaun Watson is a clear team leader, in my opinion. He was that in Clemson. I credit him with kind of leading that team to back-to-back national championships and being able to win one of them. And I think he can seriously make Houston a real good contender in that division too.
Yeah, I was expecting you to go with Luck there, so I'll take Luck here. But I agree. I think Deshaun Watson is a great quarterback to have. In three passes last week, he threw 102 yards. That leaves me with two choices between whatever they're going to do in Jacksonville and Andrew Luck. Quick side note, I don't think Blake Bortles is going to be on the Jaguars by the time the regular season starts. I think they're going to cut him, and I think Chad Henne's going to start. It's an absolute tire fire there, and they are not on the right track, but I digress. So I'm going to go with Andrew Luck. I think that I'm skeptical about Andrew Luck in two regards. One of which is the injury. I don't think he's going to start week one. I think that Jim Irsay has a history of lying about injuries. I don't think he's a trustworthy source to hear that Andrew Luck's going to be starting week one from. I think it's more likely that he starts week three or week four. I think he could miss an entire month of the season, which I think in this division really hurts the Colts' chances. But when he's healthy, he's probably a top 10 quarterback. I think he gets a little bit too much credit. I think just because of his 1 year in 2014, where he really, his first 2 years in the league, when he blew people out of the water, he's still kind of riding that. I think for him to stay in that top 10 quarterback spot, for me, I think he has to have a really big year this year. I think he has to be kind of in, he obviously won't be an MVP candidate if he doesn't play all 16 games, but he has to be up there and he has to throw upwards of 30-plus touchdowns. I think that he's a good quarterback to have, but he would not probably be my first pick in this division, obviously. And I think Patrick made a surprise, but it made me think, and I think I would have taken Watson over Luck too, but I'll go with Luck.
For my third round pick, I'm going to take DeMarco Murray. This isn't really about the running back. It's more about, for me, it's more about the offensive line question. But he's rushed for over 1,000 yards in three of his last four seasons. Now, granted, he was under the best offensive line in the NFL in Dallas a few years back. But he's still playing under a top five offensive line, in my opinion, in Tennessee. He's clearly going to be the number one option by default because of the offensive line of the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, I think that's pretty interesting that you'd even say, or that you'd say that, because I think Derrick Henry's reps are going to kind of increase at some point in the season, unless I missed an injury somewhere along the way. But my pick at running back would be Leonard Fournette, because he's going to carry that Jacksonville offense no matter how bad the team is and how bad their record is. Leonard Fournette is really going to kind of stand out and shine for the Jaguars, kind of going to be their only highlight of the season, in my opinion.
I think third for me, I go, and again, this is going to be kind of a surprise pick, but I think I go Derrick Henry. I mean, I know that Chris took DeMarco Murray at one, and I think that's all well and good, but I think by week three, we're going to see that Murray's kind of lost some of his step, because if you look at his career arc, after he has really big years, he drops off. It's what happened after the year he had in Dallas. He had a 1,845-yard year in Dallas, and then he went to Philadelphia and dropped way off. He went from about 392 touches to 193. Had all kinds of problems in that locker room. Now, that aside, the off-the-field stuff aside, the stats kind of speak for themselves. He dropped off to 702 yards the year after. He's a 29-year-old running back, and I just don't see him getting the full starting reps the entire year. Derrick Henry, on the other hand, for where they picked him up in the draft a year ago, they got a massive steal. He was projected to be a first-round back, and they got him in the third round. This preseason, he has dominated. Last year, he looked really good. I think if you plug a dominant kind of run into the run-to-contact runner like Henry behind this dominant offensive line, you can ensure that he's going to have a lot of big runs and be a big weapon for them in the red zone. So I think I go with Henry there.
All right. I don't disagree with that, but I'm going to go second running back. I'm going to take Frank Gore.
Ooh.
Now, hold up. Boy, get too far. I understand that the Colts offensive line has been poor, but if you look at it, Frank Gore's still under that poor Colts offensive line. He still rushed for over 1,000 yards last year. That's pretty good, and it shows signs on its own. If the Colts show any kind of offensive line improvements, who knows what Gore could do. He could have 1,500 yards. You know, no, that's taking it a little far, but I think he's going to have another 1,000-yard season.
Yeah, I'll give that to you. He was going to probably be my pick, but I was also leaning towards Lamar Miller. We haven't really seen much of him in the preseason so far with Houston, but I don't know what it is. I'm really high on this Houston team. I think that they can really have a breakout year in the AFC and really kind of contend for a spot in that AFC playoffs and kind of make a name for themselves as well. And Miller's going to be a big part of that. If you want to take some pressure off of Deshaun Watson as well, you're going to need Lamar Miller to kind of step up in a big way this year. And I think he definitely is capable of doing so.
Yeah, for my second running back, I'm gonna surprise people again, and I'm gonna take another guy who's kind of a backup right now, and that'd be I had his name. It's T.J. Yeldon for the Jaguars, right? T.J. Yeldon.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. So for my third pick, I'm going to kind of surprise people again. I think I'm going to go with a guy who's currently right now probably a second string running back. But I think I'm going to go T.J. Yeldon. I get that they took Fournette, and I get that he's probably going to have a big year. But I think people underrate what Yeldon has done in Jacksonville. From the moment they've taken him, he's been an above average running back. I think that Fournette has been a little bit injury prone throughout his career, so I could see him maybe struggling with injuries a little bit this season. But I think that they're going to, at some point, Leonard Fournette is going to hit that rookie wall that people talk about so much. And towards the end of the year, I think they're going to start splitting the carries. And I think for a team that's going to have Chad Henne as their starting quarterback in November, T.J. Yeldon is going to get a lot of reps in that backfield. So I think I'd take Yeldon there.
For my next pick, I'm going to take Allen Robinson. Given the QB situation in Jacksonville, he's been pretty good so far. Second year? He's been in the league for a couple of years, but he's last year, even with two, when you have G.J. Yeldon in the backfield, Robinson still had nearly 900 yards last season. Now, granted, and even his catches, I think, were like 79. With that quarterback situation in Jacksonville, that is very good, even though I was going to take T.Y. Hilton for my second wide receiver, but I'll take Allen Robinson.
Yeah, I mean, if you can get him as your second wide receiver, that's an absolute steal in an actual fantasy league. Obviously, we're just doing the AFC South. For my second wide receiver, this is a tough one. I'm kind of between two guys right now. But I'm gonna go with Corey Davis. I think that he's gonna have a pretty breakout year in Tennessee, and I think he's gonna have a fantastic year. Obviously, Eric Decker is his big competition when it comes to stealing fantasy points away from him when Mariota's throwing the rock. But I think Davis is gonna have a really good year, and that's just about it to it.
Yeah, I think for my wide receiver two spot, I think I'd probably take Dante Moncrief. I know that he hasn't been explosive over the past few years, but he's never had a full year or an extended amount of time, at least, to play with Andrew Luck. So I think if Andrew Luck gets a little bit more time in playing this season, and that's a big if, I think that Moncrief is a good option at wide receiver. He's really fast. He's great at catching the deep ball, and he can really stretch a defense and open up plays underneath for guys who aren't as talented as he is. So I think I'd go Moncrief for my wide receiver 2 pick.
For my tight end, I'm going to take Delanie Walker. This is a pretty easy pick for me. He's a veteran, of course. Been in the league for 10 years. That's the main reason. We don't really have tight ends in the AFC South are hard to come by. Good tight ends, that is. So this is really by default, but he's been a top five tight end in the NFL, you could argue. He revived his career in Tennessee because in San Francisco, he wasn't good for his first, 7 years. I think he had a maximum of 300 yards, but since he came to Tennessee, he has had 500-plus yards every season, and his catches went from, or his receiving receptions went from about 20 to 60, which shows that he was mainly the backup, but he made himself a name in Tennessee.
Yeah, absolutely. And who were you? I'm sorry, I must have missed it for a second there. But who are you referencing? In what you were just talking about, who was your pick?
Oh, Delanie Walker.
Yeah. See, I've totally blanked because I forgot that he actually played in San Francisco. Funny story. When it comes to tight ends, as you kind of said, it's rare pickings in the AFC South. I kind of wish that Julius Thomas was still with Jacksonville, just so you could go with him by default. But I kind of feel bad for taking all these Houston Texan players, but I just feel like they're going to be the best team by far in this division. But C.J. Fedorowicz, I think that he just kind of stands out as the next best option. Of course, Delanie Walker is by far the better tight end in this division, but I think if you kind of had to settle for another one in here, it's going to be CJ, that's for sure.
Yeah, I kind of I'll go by default Jack Doyle, but just expanding on that pick a little bit, I do want to kind of talk about the Indianapolis tight end spot. They lost a lot of pieces this offseason. People forget that. I'm blanking on his name. I have him right here. Dwayne Allen signed with New England, and Kobe Fleener moved on to New Orleans. They used to have a very deep tight end spot in Indy, but now they've got Jack Doyle. Jack Doyle was a good tight end, but it'll be interesting to see how he handles the brunt of the work. Moving on to our final pick for each of us of this fantasy draft, we are going to do two at once. We are going to do first an O-line pick and then pick your defense. Chris, you got the floor.
For my offensive line, I'm going to take the Tennessee Titans, and this is kind of a default for me. The Colts, if I had a number two, I would go Colts. But obviously, they can't keep Luck up, so I'm going to take the Tennessee Titans for that. And for the defense, I'm obviously going to take the Houston Texans. Best defensive line in the NFL, returning J.J. Watt, which is going to make it even better, or some might say a little worse, because we don't know how J.J. Watt's going to play after the back surgery, but they also have a top-five secondary in the NFL, and it's clearly the Houston Texans who has the best defense in the division.
Yeah. When I was kind of preparing, I wrote Houston in capital letters with the word duh afterwards. For my O-line, I'm also going to take Houston, though, because they're going to, as I said this when I was talking about my Deshaun Watson pick, they're going to look so much better when Deshaun Watson can scramble and can get rid of the ball quickly. That's when Deshaun Watson thrives. Maybe they won't look good as good in the running game with Lamar Miller, but I think that they still have opportunity to grow. I probably would have taken Tennessee had they been on the board. And then when it comes to defense, you know, once again, their defenses in this division aren't really too hot. I'm going to give it to Jacksonville because I haven't minded what I've seen from them in the preseason so far. You know, nothing really stands out. Absolutely, Houston definitely has the best defense there. I'll take Jacksonville off the board.
All right, I'm going to go with Jacksonville as my offense. I'll probably have to go with the Tennessee Titans just because I don't believe in that Colts defense much at all. Although I do think they got better, just to talk a little bit about defense for defense sake. Chris Ballard really ended up improving that defense as most he could this offseason, and they've made strides forward, and I think in the future that defense is going to get better. They aren't going to take the Ryan Grigson approach of just sitting back in free agency and letting that defense get worse year by year by year. Well, that concludes our fantasy draft. I know Chris, a little peek behind the curtain, folks. Chris was like, we were discussing doing this for tomorrow's show. Chris said it was a no-go. I think I'm going to have to disagree. I think the no-go may be me maybe not doing a snake draft when you have three people. I think by far I got the worst team, probably. Probably Pat. I'd argue actually that Patrick has, from pure fantasy standpoint, the strongest team, because I think he has the strongest running back and wide receiver position. But I think tomorrow we can do this with two people, Chris. So we look forward to our next episode, the NFC West, when we'll do this one more time, and it should be a lot of fun. So last question, and this is the question that we've asked for every division. Let's go around the horn. Actually, screw that. I took the last pick in the fantasy draft. I am going to start us out. I'm going to tell you who I think is going to win this division. I think it's going to be the Tennessee Titans. I know.
Whoa.
I think that every team in this division, minus the Jaguars, has a shot to win it. But I think Tennessee has made such drastic changes on offense. I think their red zone offense especially is just as dominant as it gets. I really don't see any team outscoring team. And on defense, they're okay. They definitely have room to improve, but they aren't the worst defense in the division. So I think I'd have to say that the Titans win this division. Patrick, I got an emphatic response from you on that one. Who you got winning this division?
Well, I think I kind of made that clear with my picks. Houston. Houston had the best shot last year, and they didn't even have a quarterback. This year they finally have someone who can kind of command that offense. And luckily for them, the rocket ship has left Houston and landed in Cleveland. And I think Houston's the clear-cut winner. I mean, Tennessee's a talented team. They might take a wild card spot if a couple other teams kind of falter in the AFC. But in my opinion, it's really got to be Houston. They have a defense that is one of the best in the league right now, with a lot of returning assets to it, along with the likes of J.J. Watt, who was not around for most of last season. I just don't see them really falling off kilter with where they were last year.
This is a very
that's an excellent point, Chris.
This is a very tough choice. My head says the Houston Texans, but I'm gonna go with the Titans. I don't think I think Marcus Mariota is going to be more consistent than Tom Savage or Deshaun Watson. I don't think the offensive line of the Houston Texans is as good as the offensive line of the Tennessee Titans. Like I said, I don't think the consistency is going to be there. If Tom Savage starts, the Houston Texans have absolutely no chance to win this division, I don't think. Of course, we haven't seen Mariota for a full season, which is scary. But there's no margin of error for the Titans. If the Titans lose Marcus Mariota, offensive line goes to shreds, Houston Texans are going to win this division. But like I said, my mind keeps on wanting, it wants me to say the Houston Texans are going to win this division because I feel like I know they're going to win the division, but I'm going to take the Titans.
Yeah, I mean, the AFC South, in my opinion, is going to, it may not have the most playoff contenders this year, but I think it's going to be the most fun division to watch week to week. I think every team, minus probably the Jaguars, but even with the way that their running game is, the Jaguars could be entertaining to watch. So I'm really excited and looking forward to this division. So, Patrick, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely, anytime. Thanks
if you want to plug your Twitter really quick.
Yeah, absolutely. You can find me at PD Norton, Norton, 3 on Twitter. And you'll see me tweeting about football pretty much all season long. A few baseball and a few hockey things in there as well.
Awesome. Well, that's great to hear. For us, you can, of course, follow us at EndZonePod on Twitter. You can follow Christian at CHRCHS1, and you can follow me at Eric18Utah. We will be back on Wednesday with our NFC West preview, and then Friday we have a very special show because the End Zone is not just pro football, it is all football. Chris, do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, in our bio we say we're going to talk about college football occasionally. Well, the occasion has came and it's coming on Friday. We're going to talk about the college football playoffs. We're going to talk about our top 10s. Well, and then we're going to talk about our division by division winner for each Power 5 conference. We're going to have a good time. I think you'll enjoy it.
Yeah.
Just want to throw this in there as my last words, and then I'll be hopping off. Big 12 winner right here, University of Kansas, calling it. They've only won 2 games in the last 2 years, but, hey, you never know.
Keep dreaming.
Yeah, really.
Of course.
All right. Well, that has been a fantastic edition of the End Zone Podcast. Catch Patrick on Twitter. Also, catch me and Chris there. Go ahead and follow End Zone Podcast. We are going to be doing a giveaway soon. We're still unclear on the details, but we'll talk to you more about that on Wednesday. Until then,